But when you go out and buy a house for investment, you are buying a business. If you're going to sell somebody a business, you should probably know a little bit about it.
Hey, babes, it's Kayla Kraft with the Mommy Millionaire Podcast. I'm a mom of three littles, ER nurse turned self-made millionaire, and lifestyle entrepreneur. I am bringing you inspiring stories, business and mindset tips to help you be shameless in pursuing your ambitions. Hey, Mommy Millionaires, I am so excited about today's special guest because I think this is like, 2 years in the making or something like that. It's been a long time coming having the guest on today. So what I first want to remind you guys of is the Millionaires Society is open for enrollment right now. So you guys are going to hear us talk about a lot of amazing concepts today. And what I want you to know is that you need mentorship to go to the next level. And the Millionaires Society is helping you do that. I've coached thousands of women to get to where you want to go, which is making seven figures a year. So join that group. It's only $67 a month, and I can't wait to see you in there. So let's get into today's episode. We are talking all things investing in yourself and investing in real estate. And I have the privilege of having my friend Steve Valentine on today's podcast. And me and him first met actually through Chris Harder's mastermind 2 years ago, well, back in 2018. And I was like, who is this guy getting up here talking about all things real estate with this goatee and like big attitude? And I was like, who is this guy? I need to be friends with him. And it turns out we're great friends now. And I love his heart and service for people. He is all about giving back and adding massive value to his community. And that's why I had to have him on the Mommy Millionaire podcast. He is a wealth of information when it comes to real estate. And so I cannot wait for you guys to learn from him. He's the owner of the Valentine Group that hangs out over in Arizona. And he's also a dad and a husband. So we're going to talk all those things today. So welcome, Steve Valentine, to the Mommy Millionaire podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. That was quite the introduction.
It's all about the introduction. I have to make sure like people are like, why should I listen to Steve? So hopefully now they know why
they know. Should listen. Now they know.
To Steve. Okay. So I know you weren't like, I know you kind of grew up in real estate. Not kind of, you did. But like, it wasn't always like the glory story that you have right now.
No, there's a lot of mess in it when it comes down to it.
So I like to talk about the mess.
Okay. So the mess, really it comes through living through so many different markets. You know, my dad always told me when, before he passed was that in the 20 years I'd been in the business, I had seen just sheer chaos during that time from the upswing in the market to the downtick to it coming back. So I've seen it all. And lived in it. My dad was in real estate back in the 70s and 80s when interest rates were super high, and he always got creative. That was one of the things, my legacies that my dad left me was the creativity in real estate. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun structuring things that that are creative, that aren't just the norm of putting a sign in the yard and selling and those types of things. So the mess kind of happened. 2006, had my license for 6 years at the time, and the market crashed, right? At that time, we were trying to build other businesses around. And if I could go back and do it differently, which we are now, we had seven construction companies, we had 75 employees, 22 fleet vehicles, and real estate was supporting all of that. And so when it tanked, we were stuck with a lot of debt. So in 2007, we split the partnership with my parents and we walked away $1 million in debt.
Oh,
and we had lost $1 million.
That literally just gave me chills. Like, yeah, $1 million in debt.
$400,000 personally guaranteed to American Express across eight companies.
So how did that feel?
Well, it came in the form of a suicide letter. That was pretty much the lowest point, being a dad of toddlers, feeling like I had failed my wife and not being able to provide. And so now it's 2007 and we're on our own. We just lost our house to foreclosure. Like, everything is in chaos.
And your kids are toddlers at the time.
And so I remember closing the front door on a house that my wife absolutely loved, that we had over leveraged in order to reinvest into the company and keep things moving. And it was just one of those things that just never stopped. And so finally, when I just said enough is enough, we got to start over. And so, you know, and again, when you watch your wife after all the things that we had, materialistic and all that stuff, and you watch her walk out the door in December to go wait tables at 35 years old, leaving two toddlers at home, it just kind of breaks your heart and defeated me.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
So how did you pick yourself back up? Because most people don't pick themselves back up.
Yeah, there was a lot of people that didn't. You know, we were blessed with an opportunity in 2008. The broker that I was working with at the time, this is back when we started seeing just a sheer amount of foreclosures happening, mm-hmm. right? It's like every house on the street was in some sort of foreclosure.
Yeah.
And so the only way you were really making money at that time was either you had investors that you're building relationships. There was a few people still able to buy houses in that time. And
We did. That's when we bought our first home.
Right. And so then there was the foreclosures, or in other words, the REO account. Mm-hmm. And so I remember the broker calling me that day and going, "Hey, I have an opportunity. Do you have $10,000? I'm like, "Yeah, I got 10 grand. I didn't have anything. I didn't have a pot to piss in. And so I just said yes. And it's one of those things I kind of learned back then, say yes, figure it out later. So she's like, "Okay, I'm going to need that check and this, that, and the other." And so I ended up going to a really good friend of mine that had mentored me, and I got into this just small group of guys. We were having coffee when the market was shifting, and we were just talking about what can we do? What are we doing? And a good friend of mine, Dave, lent me the $10,000 to start. Aww. And he was super gracious about it. And Dave actually ended up being my partner for a long time in that space. But that was our opportunity of a lifetime. Because if you had that account, that was where we're going to make money. Now, back then it was crazy. You'd have to, in comparison to now, you have to sell 10 houses to make 10 grand. Cause you're selling houses for $20,000 at the time, making $1,000 commission. And so it was done in volume.
Yep.
And so by the time the REO days had stopped, we had sold a little over 5,000 homes for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. But it was scary too, because we got the account in September of 2008, and had to have one more blow to go with my debt and everything else, is I broke my neck.
How did you break your neck?
Doing a Mad Mud Run, doing an obstacle course, Thanksgiving of that year. So 3 months after we'd been given the opportunity. Gosh. So that week, I literally hunkered down in the hospital with a neck brace on, working. Nobody knows. We didn't tell anybody, because I told my wife, I'm like, "If anybody knows, it potentially could hurt this account. Like, somebody will stop giving us assets." Yeah. So nobody knows.
And it was like before social media was huge.
Right. So it was, I just did an interview the other day and I couldn't even find a picture from that time in the hospital. There wasn't anything there. And so I literally, my assistant came into the hospital and my wife would go out and look at some properties. And then I had a couple other people that were helping me, but we literally like just hunkered down in the hospital. But that week, it was multiple MRIs, multiple CAT scans, and I crushed C5, C6.
Oh my gosh.
So when I dove into the last obstacle, there was mud, water, something sticking out of the ground, and I hit it full force when I pushed off, and it just crushed
C5. You got so lucky.
Yeah, well, it was by the grace of God, because the surgeon came in. He's like, "You had two options." And this is my wife and I looking at each other Thanksgiving week saying, "We can do this surgery. We're going to put 7 pins in your neck. But there's a 50-50 shot you come out paralyzed."
Oh my gosh.
So we just had to have faith that God was going to be there and watch over it. And sure enough, I came out. I walked out of the hospital on Thanksgiving Day walking. And 6 weeks later, fully recovered, no physical therapy or anything. And still have my pins and reminder that the 6-inch scar that's on my neck.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm glad you're okay.
Well, thanks.
And I mean, there's just so much that happened in that 2-year span.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. So do you think that all of that stuff that you went through has really led you to this moment that you're in right now?
It really has. They were, you know, I always look at things and I think that sometimes God allows you to go through things before you need them, right? You just never know where that impact is going to have later on down the road, right?
Oh yeah.
So I remember writing or doing an interview for this article that was they nominated agents every month. And I remember the year later, because in Phoenix, my parents and I, we were one of the largest, most successful real estate teams at the time. And when you go from that to being broke, how do you help other people that are going through the same situation? So they wrote an article and I decided to just let it all out. We'd gone through foreclosure. This is where we're at. This is, you know.
Because did you guys have to declare bankruptcy?
We never did.
Wow. How do you go from being $1 million in debt? Like, how do you recover from that?
We went nose to the grindstone. We were everything that we were doing. It was almost like the Dave Ramsey thing.
Yeah.
There was a spreadsheet 3 pages long and we just whittled away at it every month.
Okay. If that doesn't give every single one of you guys listening in right now hope, then I don't know what will. That's insane. That's amazing.
So 4 years. So 2008, from the time I broke my neck and we got that. In 2012, we were actually able to, we had paid all of our debt off, all of our back taxes, and bought a house again 4 years later. So zero to that was pretty amazing, but it was a character thing for us.
Yeah.
Because some of the stuff that was in that debt was personal debt to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I refused to file bankruptcy and I refused to not do. I mean, we settled with some debt with American Express and some of that other stuff. And we worked through a lot of things with attorneys, but it was just a character thing.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure that I had that trust that mm-hmm. somebody loaned me money. And
you wanted to make right on it.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And we did. We made right on everything there. And even some of that debt wasn't technically mine, but I was the mouthpiece behind the debt. It went into the companies and I got stuck with it personally
mm-hmm.
because it was my mouth that made the agreement.
Totally.
And so I wanted to make sure and do the right thing.
Wow. Well, that's amazing.
Thank you.
Here you are today.
Here I am today.
Okay. So first of all, how does like a marriage survive that type of like, cause that's almost like traumatic.
It was extremely traumatic.
Yeah.
But I think marriage wise surviving it, it's having number one, my wife always looked at me and she never blamed me for anything. She's like, we made those decisions together.
That's good.
When we put the money in, when we signed for credit cards, all those things. And so when we went through it, it was hand in hand. We both grabbed shovels and we started digging.
Yeah.
And she was always, it's so interesting how she's played so many roles throughout the years. Like when the company was going down originally, she moved into the property manager role. And then she moved into, I'm going to be a transaction coordinator for my dad at the time when we had babies. And so she moved from one thing to the next. So she never wanted to be that person that was just sitting at home.
Yeah.
She was always wanting to contribute. And so when we started doing the foreclosures, she all of a sudden became the accountant because if you don't know this about foreclosures, you're bankrolling everything for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and getting reimbursed.
Oh.
And if you don't track it and you don't submit things the right way, you lose it. So now, you know, you go a couple of years into it and we have somewhat of $200,000 to $300,000 of our own money out there and reimbursable. Who better to track it?
Yeah.
So Wendy jumped in and she tracked it and she was amazing at it. And so it gave her a really good background. We learned a lot in those days with construction and different things. And then, you know, where we're at now really is a result of my dad passing in 2015.
Hmm.
He was running a separate brokerage. He was a rock star when it came down to it. We both reinvented ourselves. You know, it's one thing I would say to the audience is don't be afraid to reinvent yourself.
Yeah.
So when
a lot of people are, when
I look in my industry, you know, I've been 20 years last year licensed and I can go through and it's like every 5 years, there's a market shift, there's something and you want to move with it. You want to find those niches and move with
yeah.
it. And so
don't stay stuck in the same story.
Right. So my dad reinvented himself while I was doing foreclosures. My dad was selling foreclosures at trustee sale to investors.
Oh.
And he was building these massive portfolios for people. I think my dad bought 900 homes at trustee sale in that 4 year period of time for investors, helping them. And what was interesting is when he passed, it was 9 months. So in 2015, the foreclosures were slowing down. So I had to spend half of my week in my dad's company breaking it down for him because he was diagnosed with terminal cancer and we didn't know how long it was going to be. And, you know, he had so many irons in the fire that he wasn't mentally all there during that time because of treatments and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
So that was really a time that my dad and I kind of got to heal some of our relationship in that 9 months. I used to do field trips on Thursday with my dad. I'd go pick him up and take him to the casino, and we'd hang out and we'd play bingo and all kinds of random stuff. But it was just my way of going and hanging out with him.
That's
and making the time
cute.
For it. But as I started to break down his business, I started to see some things. I'm like, well, that might be able to be done a little bit better, or maybe this, or what is this?
It was like that fresh set of eyes.
It was a fresh set of eyes. And so we all agreed that we would split his company, and basically I would take over any investor relations with the investors on the sales, and my mom would take over the property management company. She would keep that as a separate entity, and that would provide an ongoing stream of income for that time period. And so that's when my eyes were really open. So this is probably the thing that still saddens me the most about my dad, is that in that time, the 900 homes he purchased, he worked for all these investors, but he wasn't doing it for himself.
He wasn't setting up that financial legacy for
Correct.
Himself.
It was always about chasing the commission.
Yeah.
You know, it was chasing the next payroll. It was chasing this. And some of the investors, I'll be honest with you, I didn't care for. They were extremely greedy. They were beating my dad down. And I still, to this day, his biggest investor, I got no love for, period. Because I really felt that they took advantage of my dad and some of the things that this man promised my dad.
Never happened.
He completely reneged when my dad passed. So, you know, he took all of his properties out of the property management company and pretty much told my mom to go to hell. And so what was really disheartening for
Karma.
Me, right? So at that time was when my eyes were opened up to, okay, I like the investment space and there's so much that can be done with it, but I want to work with people and we're going to build wealth together. And I'm going to earn a living for the knowledge that I have and my ability to be creative and my ability to move things around and guide you through the process. I try to explain to people when they come in, well, you get paid a commission. Well, that's one part of it, but I'm also being paid for my knowledge and how I guide you through this. And so it's really become, you know, partly consulting, you know, showing people how to invest and how to do it smart,
yeah,
not to just go buy houses. Because it's amazing to me that last year I spoke to about 5,000 real estate agents, and you ask people that are in the industry, which reminded me a lot of my dad, how many people in here own investment properties?
Not a lot.
Only 5%.
Yeah.
So, but here's the crazy thing. 100% of those people will sell an investor a house tomorrow. But when you go out and buy a house for investment, you were buying a business. If you're going to sell somebody a business, you should probably know a little bit about it. So that's where it's kind of, you know, again, full circle. The last 5 years, you know, you ask how my wife and I have survived. We went in different pieces of the business, but she found her niche and she found the thing that she loved, which now drives her. So in the last 5 years, we've bought more than 500 homes. She acts as the general contractor. So she,
because what's her, like her username or something?
It's Boss Lady Red.
Oh, she changed it.
Yeah.
Wasn't it like contractor wife or something?
Oh, that
like,
was just kind of joking, yeah, okay, that we had going on. So she's flipped 500 homes
That's
in the
insane.
Last 5 years. And we've started to get a little bit away from the flipping because now she's a licensed general contractor and people are seeking her out for renovations. And that's where she wants to go. She likes working with people and bringing houses back to life. And so again, we're going into this little bit of a reinvention period where her business is starting to grow and she loves it and she's good at it and she's talented. And so we're focused more on the investment space and really being very creative inside the real estate space.
Yeah. Okay. So what does that look like in 2020 to be creative inside the real estate space?
Oh, there's a lot of crazy to that. Let me...
Because some people say, like, I have a brother-in-law that says, like, real estate's dying.
Why?
I don't know. He thinks that, like, there's no need for an agent anymore. Like, he's actually looking for,
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I'm not going to disagree with that. Like, you can. Most people will be like, well, I don't need an agent. You're right. You don't need an agent until crap hits the fan.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's experiences. So if you look at my experience, and I keep trying to figure out actually how to communicate it, I feel like the farmer's insurance commercial. You know, we've seen a thing or two, or so we can cover a thing or two, whatever they say.
I mean, I gave up TV, so I don't know.
I mean, 4 weeks ago, I'm at a house like this, looking out the window, and I watched a cow fall in their pool.
What? In Arizona? Uh-huh. You guys have cows in Arizona?
We have cows in Arizona.
Wow.
So
I learn something new every day.
I've seen so much. And so those experiences are what matters as far as guiding people through the real estate process. You don't need me to open the door, but you do need someone's experiences to guide you through when something goes wrong or the negotiation piece or how to best handle financing or how to best, you know, move things around. And that's where a lot of our guidance comes in when it comes down to the investment side.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody gets into real estate thinking it's going to be easy.
Totally. They're like, there's so much money to be made in real estate.
And it's not. You know, I was fortunate enough when I started with my dad, you know, mentorship is such a need in no matter what industry you get into. If you start out thinking you're going to do everything on your own, it's just not going to happen. You can speed up your pace by having mentors and being willing to leave some things on the table in order to speed it up.
Yep.
You know, I sat at the 2-foot edge of my dad's desk for the first 2 years, no commissions, being paid hourly. Go show a house, go put flyers here, go do this. But I listened to his phone calls for years so that I could learn what to say, what to do. And that was such an incredible experience for me. I didn't know it at the time. Mm-hmm. But now you talk to these agents that are just getting their license. I'm like, go mentor with somebody. Go pay your dues and learn the business. Because you are, this will probably shock you, is it's amazing that you can go to school for 90 hours and totally screw up somebody's life financially because of your lack of experience.
Yeah.
You're helping somebody with the biggest investment of their life. And you go do 90 hours and then you go practice on people. And it's just, it's a shame that it happens, but you hear the horror stories.
Oh yeah.
What happens.
That's why people run. I'm like, I don't want the newbie. I don't want the newbie.
Right. But I think
But then you want to give those people a chance too. It's like, who's your mentor? Who have you been mentored by?
Right. Yeah, I'm all about giving people chances, but there should be somebody mentoring them through those things. And I'll give you a great example. When you talk about, you know, the no need for real estate agents. Well, Wendy is currently renovating a house for somebody that she told them not to buy the house because they were going to be doing some remodeling. We go back and we look up the agent history. She had done like 25 deals in the last 4 years.
Which is not a lot.
It's not a lot, but here's the scary thing. Wendy told him not to buy it because there had been some additions on the house and it could cause issues with the permit process.
Yeah.
This agent had no idea what any of that is. So now Wendy's having to go backtrack because of permit issues. They've opened the house up. Now we've got problems with the city. And some of this could have been avoided had they had somebody with the right experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I have this question that's coming up. Is right now a good time to buy like a home? Because I think I'm a huge Robert Kiyosaki fan. Hmm? And he's like, your home is not an investment.
Right. So let's go on two ways. Because Grant Cardone says the same thing. You know, rent where you live and own what you rent.
Yeah, I rent my house.
Right. I own mine. But different price points, right? So here's the thing about that. It's always a good time to buy. Depending on what your future is when it comes down to it.
Okay.
You know, so when you look at real estate investing, it is the only thing that you can borrow against with a low down payment and have somebody else pay off the investment over time. Right? If you put $200,000 in the stock market, it's your $200,000.
Right.
You can't go get a loan to put it in there. So it's something that you can leverage over time and have somebody else pay off. And so when you look at, I have crazy aspirations of my goal is 50-50 at 50, which is 50 homes by the age of 50 that are free and clear, producing $50,000 to $60,000 a month in residual income.
Ooh, I like it. When are you going to be 50?
I got 9 years.
Okay. All right.
42 next month.
You got some time.
Yeah, I got some time. But we've, you know, in 5 years, so go back to this is how fast it can happen. And again, it's done creatively. And now we're guiding people on how to do it, especially in the entrepreneur world. The people, they're making money.
Yeah, people listening right now, they want to know where to put their money.
Right. So what happens, you know, 5 years ago when we start reinventing, I start looking, oh, my dad really didn't know anything. So I need to make sure that I change
that you own.
I changed the course, right? For my family, for my kids, you know, would my mom's life look a lot different had my dad owned 50 properties when he passed? And so we started diving into it and we bought our first house. And another one of those deals, I walked into an appointment and I decided to ask the guy if I could buy it. Going, well, what's the worst case scenario? I don't make $3,000 and he tells me to get out, but what's the best case scenario? So in that 5-year period, we bought the house, I think for $105,000. It's worth $250,000 today. My mortgage is $700 a month and it rents for $1,400 a month.
Wow. Must be nice to live in Arizona.
Right? yeah, you probably can't do the type of investing I do in California, but I can do it for you in Arizona.
Yes.
So I work with a lot of out-of-state clients that are looking for a place that somewhere they can be trusted, you know, with the investment. And we have all those things from construction to property management. So we really make it very turnkey and very easy for them to do it.
Shameless plug.
Right. Shameless plug. but that's what happens. People are like, yeah, I want to invest in real estate. So they call a real estate agent that doesn't own a rental property and doesn't know anything about it. And then they sell them something that doesn't make sense. And then they get a bad gut about or feeling about, oh, this in real estate investing sucks because of this. Actually, it doesn't. But the person that guided you to what you bought,
bad experience,
you just had a bad experience. And you know, a lot of people will have the question: well, what if the market goes down? What if it does? You know, that's always a thing. That's everybody's. You know, what happens?
Yeah.
Okay. And
but it's inevitable that it will, right?
Well, it's inevitable, but it depends on the markets. Depends on the industry. You look at where I'm at right now. We have the fastest growing county in the country. We have 250 people a day leaving here, going there.
I wonder why.
but you're looking at all the factors in it. You know, some people I know that are investing in Alabama, there's no industry.
Some mobile homes over there.
They're getting a really low baseline price, but there's nothing driving there. So that's going to be one of the first places that might see that fluctuation in market.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, when you go back and you look at, well, what if the value of the house goes down? It doesn't make any difference until you're ready to sell it. And if you're really looking at it as a long term, I always go back to the very first house I bought. Had I kept it, you know, I was 23. I bought it for 107. I was 23 when I sold it. Sweet. The California investors are in here in droves. They're paying cash for everything. I sold it for $200,000. I still don't know where that $100,000 is that I got when I was 23. But so then the house in the downturn goes down to 140, so $30,000 over what I paid for it. But today, had I just kept it, my mortgage was $900 a month. It would be valued at 275 and it would be 24 years paid off.
Wow.
And it's a $275,000 asset that's almost free and clear that is still producing.
Wow. That's a good way to look at it.
So it's a timing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have asked, well, the market's up. Why wouldn't you sell half your portfolio and move it into the other half? Because that's not part of the plan. The plan is I want all these assets being paid off over time rather than getting the cash flow. And everybody's got different opinions on how to do it. This is just my strategy.
I like to hear all the different like ways that people are building wealth for themselves.
Right.
I think that's important. There's like more than one way to do something.
Yeah. And there's great ways. I mean, I was actually, it was super interesting reading an article the other day that Maricopa County was—
Is that where you're—
That's where
that
I'm at in Phoenix. We were number 49 as far as the lowest amount of millennials buying houses in the country.
Wow. Number 40, there's 50 states?
50 states. So we're, yes, there's still 50 states, Kayla. but what was interesting about that is that I think millennials have gotten a lot of bad information because they saw their parents go through the real estate crash. They don't want to own all these other things. But what if the millennials were looking at it from a business perspective? You're going to go get some roommates and go pay somebody's rent, right?
Yeah.
So why not get a couple of people as partners and go buy a house that eventually becomes an asset, right? It becomes a partnership.
Well, you have to have that long-term mindset.
Right.
You can't look at like what's the short-term gain going to be because then you are going to lose. Like
It's also a business mindset.
Yep.
I still work out with one of my little brother's best friends from high school. And I remember selling him and his best friend a house back when they were 20. They were both changing oil at an Econolube, and they bought a house together. And sure enough, they both got a decent payout when they sold it, but they were going to be roommates anyway.
Yeah.
So they just made it a business.
I love that.
So great. It's just a different way to look
There's
at it.
There's a lot of millennials listening in right now, so pay attention. Now, so let's say somebody lives in California, though. Mm-hmm. I think I have a lot of, well, I have people from all over the world sure. listening in. But what if you're living in one of the most expensive places in the world, I think, to live, and you don't, like here, I was just talking to a girlfriend, to buy a decent-sized home here where I live in Newport Beach, $2.8 million. Like,
right.
So you're looking at least at like $600,000 down. And most people don't have $600,000 laying around.
Right.
So what do you do in that case? Would you say, okay, I might have $200,000. That's when I should just go and get an investment property in a different state and rent here?
Yeah. Yeah, because you look at, you know, it depends too, you know, what you can. So I would always look at it from the factor of, okay, you can buy a $2.8 million house. What's the payment? What's the maintenance? All those things that go with mm-hmm. it, right? Mm-hmm. Versus renting, you know. And I think if I'm in a $3 million price range, I'm probably going to see what the rent is for something like that.
Yeah.
Rather than investing in it because it's such a big purchase.
Rent's going to be like $9,500.
Right. So that versus the payment, it's probably cheaper to rent than it is to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And plus somebody else maintains it. So I don't disagree with that theory at all, but it doesn't mean that you shouldn't take. So if you did have $600,000 to put down and you didn't, well, where are you putting that money?
Yeah.
It's at least good to spread it out and own some investment properties in different parts of the country or thinking about.
But how do you do, okay, because I've heard different things about like only investing where like you can get there quick enough to like check out your properties.
Or you have a trusted person that is taking care of those things.
So what does the questionnaire look like? Like, how do you know you trust this person to take care of your properties?
You know what? I think a big thing is one, you're kind of interviewing the real estate agent and finding out what connections they have, what their background is. And then finding out some property management companies. And the reviews are all online pretty well in the property management companies.
Yeah.
And it's asking the questions like, what do you guys do for preventative maintenance? And that's where I think a lot of property management companies miss communicate with the client. When people buy real estate, you have to understand somebody's paying to live there. But you still have to maintain the asset.
Yeah.
Right? There's still going to be some money that has to be. You don't want to be one of those landlords.
Yeah, my landlord's like that.
Don't want to put any money into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
we're
so
like, well, this is a luxury home, dude. Get over here.
Right. So, but that's a mindset. So I try to communicate that to my clients when they come in that, hey, you're going to get a return on your money on the investment by continuing to maintain and continuing to keep up the house. And here's where it comes back at. My average tenant on my homes is 5 to 7 years.
Wow.
Is how long they stay. Why? Because we put money into our homes. They're nice. They're upgraded. They're updated. And when something breaks, I fix it.
Yeah.
I'm not, I they're people. They're human beings that are staying
in my
homes.
You want to take good care of them.
Right. So I want to take care of the house and I want to take care of the family that lives there. I mm-hmm. don't want to be that person like what you just said where they're bad mouthing their landlord because they won't do anything. Right?
Hopefully my landlord's not listening in. He might be, but hi.
So that's really, you know, when you start investing into real estate, it's a mindset. And that's really where I take my clients down that road of what are your reserves? What do things look like? I don't want somebody.
And these are such good questions.
Yeah.
You're like, duh. This is what I do. But I mean, I think a lot of people like it sounds like cool to do it, but like they don't know the right questions to ask. And like, in order to have a better life, you have to ask yourself better questions.
Right. Right. And so even for, you know, take you for instance, when it comes down to you're like, okay, so buying a house, I could, but it doesn't make sense. So I'm going to stay here.
The house I want is like $25 million.
Oh, got it. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, same thing. You should go rent that. But now you start looking at, well, where are some other places? Well, real estate is not a super sexy investment, right? But it is when you look at it long-term.
You have to have that long-term play.
Right. So it's something that's over here on the side that somebody's managing. Yes, you're going to have vacancies. Yes, you're going to have, I mean, like I said, I've seen it all. 6 months ago, I had the front door blown off of one of my houses by SWAT team.
What?
Yeah, they were serving a search warrant for the tenant. And it wasn't even the tenant. It was his buddy that was living there.
Oh my gosh. So what'd you do? Did you kick those people out?
Yeah, he had to leave because we have a crime-free addendum. But here's the crazy thing. The guy had lived there for 2 years, always paid his rent on time. It had nothing to do with him. The house was immaculate. Well, it was just missing a front door. So you laugh about it. You're like, eh.
Because it's not my problem.
But here's where people always hear horror stories. It's like, you know, tenants are bad. They don't take care of things. Well, yeah, if you buy in lower income areas and those types of things. So again, it's strategy. What kind of landlord do you want to be? Are you trying to look at the long-term plan or are you looking at cash flow? So there's a number of different things that come into play that we question our investors. What direction do you want to go? So that we can give them all the information up front. So like right now, we own 35 homes and we've only had one eviction in the last 7 years.
Wow. It was the guy that got his door blown off?
Right.
Wow.
And it wasn't even really his fault.
Okay. So it's not that bad.
It's not. You have repairs. You have things like, and here's kind of the misconception. So you think about, oh, well, if I have to replace an AC unit.
Yeah.
Well, AC units last about 20 years. So you're going to have to do it once.
Yeah.
Right. So when somebody calls.
And in reality, it's not that much money.
Right.
If you're investing in real estate, you're going to have the cash to do that.
Right. It's going to happen or budget for it.
Yeah.
Right. So
put it into a separate account.
Right. So that's where we try to help people. Now, when you get to 35 properties, you know, you have more outgo when it comes down to it.
Yeah. Okay. So do you have somebody like managing all of that stuff for you? Have your own property management company? And so you're managing them?
Yes.
How do you keep track of those people? Then your real estate group, and then plus now you're consulting. I know you're doing courses, podcasts, all that kind of stuff. How are you doing all that?
Good people.
How do you find good people? That is such a hot topic on Mommy Millionaire right now.
We could have that conversation all day long because it's taken me forever. I was just telling Chase, I'm like, I finally feel like my group is where solid. It needs to be. It's solid. The team is all in place.
Do you think it's because you're finally where you need to be? Like you're attracting all the best people?
Yes and no. Part of it was I wasn't really clear on where I wanted to be.
Ooh,
and so if you can't communicate your vision and your clarity, it's really hard to bring in the right people.
Yeah.
And I also think that you have to, you know, have more of those almost like trial periods for people to see if they're going to fit culturally, to see if they're going to live out what you want them to live out.
Yeah. So how long is your trial period? For people?
90 days.
Okay. That's what we said too.
Yeah.
I like that. And like, how can you spot them out? Like, what are some, or do you have some like trick questions to ask them before you even let them start their trial period?
Yeah. So the trick questions are really in, I think it was some of the stuff I took from Mastermind. Like, what was the last 3 books you read? And they give you 5.
Yeah.
Right.
Then it's you're just like, okay, you're into self growth.
Right. You have to have different things that they'll follow directions for different positions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just hired, I think it's really important, especially in real estate. I think it's important basically in any industry is somebody, the people that are there have to want to support your vision and where you want to go. And they don't want to be you.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Right? That is so important. So important.
Right. The person that's supporting you doesn't want to be you. They want to support you and take you.
Yes.
Further. And that's their only goal. It's their only drive. And I think that that's really important. We ask a lot of those questions because real estate agents, I mean, they're notorious for it. They come in, they're there for a year or two, they learn stuff and they're like, I can do this on my own. Peace out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, we've had some of that turnover and it's super frustrating because you pour your heart and soul into people and teach them those things, but they have different aspirations and they can go do it better on their own.
Yeah. So how are you creating an amazing culture right now?
Amazing culture. One of the things that I love to do is it's our coaching on Friday morning. It's called Butts and Seats. So the joke is you got to be-
You would call it that.
You got to be there at 8 a.m. or if you're not, we all stand in the lobby and lock the door and laugh at you because you're late.
Sounds great.
I always do it myself rather than having somebody else do it, but I go to Starbucks and get everybody's favorite drink on Friday morning.
Oh, that's cute.
And we do that.
I need to do that.
And so it's just kind of my servant leadership, you know, being grateful for them.
Yes.
And then it's-
You guys take notes. Get them their favorite coffees.
Yep.
That goes a long way.
Actually, I just posted about it yesterday. Last Friday, I spent $120 on coffee. We talked about, I'm a dad, right? So I got teenage boys.
That's good to get them.
And so at 6:30 after my workout on Friday morning, I go to Dutch with whatever teenagers they bring in.
Dutch. Oh my gosh.
I'm not a big fan of waiting in their lines. That's my problem. Yeah. They're a time waste.
Yeah.
But
we don't have them here. So I think it's like, I love them.
So I hang with 13 teenagers. Last week it was 13 of them. And it's my way of getting to connect with the teens. And I buy them all coffee and they all get hugs on their way to school. So I get 13 hugs from the kids.
Aww.
And it's a way that just kind of connects us. And then I go to Starbucks after that and get coffee for the team.
Yep. Oh, I love that. That is so cool. Okay. So you're getting some quality time coaching them to be their best selves. Is that what that looks like on Friday mornings?
Yep.
Okay. Now I want to talk to you about like when it comes to helping those people on your team become their best selves, how do you like you're growing wealth for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So I know you want to help your team grow wealth for themselves too. So do you like help them create their own portfolio?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So that's part of the coaching on Fridays.
My goal is that all the agents in there are investors in investor mindset.
So will you invest in them? Like, will you be like, hey, here's money?
So it's not money, but they get first opportunity based on seniority. So we buy a lot of stuff off market. If it makes sense, they get first dibs on it. They know that the company has to make a certain amount of money if they keep something in house, which is fine, but I want them. You know, Erica's one of my partners. She just bought her second one. Josh just brought one in where he has a goal. He doesn't have the down payment needed yet. So I partnered with him. So I'm going to partner with him on that property and we're going to do it together.
Dude, I want to come work for you.
Okay.
Joking. I don't think I could work for you.
So yeah, it's very much a goal inside is that I want everybody to understand. And you know, that kind of goes back to, you know, finding good people. I think if you're going to go to work for somebody, you have to look at, it's not just a paycheck, the non-monetary value you get from being somewhere.
Yep.
And that is one of the things I've tried to be very clear with my agents, the coaching, the information, the stuff that you're seeing, there's like, it's priceless information. You're not going to see it anywhere else. You know, the next real estate team you go on.
It's like you're selling yourself to your teammates all the time. Like, you're getting something special here.
Right. And
I think that's important. You're a good salesperson.
Oh, thanks. I chose a couple of years ago to run the real estate team a little bit different. You know, most real estate teams, they're kind of all off and running doing their things. My team is there to support me. They're there to build Valentine Group. They're there to help me build my business. And I like to refer to my staff as my partners. So when I'm dealing with a referral or something coming in, it's always my partner, Erica, will take over from here. My partner, Josh. So they never feel like they're, oh, now I've got the assistant.
Yeah.
So that's one important. Of the things that's really built our culture as well is that we win together as a group. It's not, oh, well, that person got that lead and they're going to make more money. Everybody's winning together.
So I know there's a mommy millionaire listening in right now that is like, okay, I want to get started in investing and they've never invested in real estate first. How much money do they need to come up with?
So typically it's 20%.
Okay.
To put down is the typical what we call non-owner occupied financing. So if you're going to buy a rental property, it's going to be non-owner occupied financing. So the down payment always depends on cash flow. You know, the more money you put down, the more the monthly cash flow. Some people, they'll put as little as possible down because they're not concerned about monthly cash flow. You know, if it's break even or a little bit of cash flow, it's not a big deal. So it depends.
Why would you not be concerned about cash flow? Because you want that home so you could have equity to pull out a line?
Well, and again, this is my opinion when it comes down to it. I have a portfolio that some cash flow very well. And some might be a little negative, but part of it is that the ones that might run a little negative, I bought a massive amount of value in the house.
Okay.
So there's a lot of different levels to that. So I might have secured a house at 60 cents on the dollar and I'm paying 10% interest on it to hold it, but it's because the amount of equity that I bought in the deal.
Okay. So this is why you need to work with somebody that's experienced. What if like Sasha from Wisconsin is listening in right now and she's like, you're all the way over in Arizona. How do they find somebody like you where they live?
I think again, you can, I mean, number one, you can always reach out to me and say, I'm thinking about investing in my market and I will find you a person that's
okay,
in your market.
You guys just got permission to hit Steve Valentine up. So follow through on that.
Yeah.
Take it serious. He's a great mentor.
That's the thing, because it's not, again, even if you're in Wisconsin and you want to understand the investing, that's where my consulting piece comes in, because it still applies in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and you just don't want to go to just any like random real estate agent where they're just used to just selling houses. They're right. Not looking at it as an investment. Yep.
Once somebody calls and says, I want to buy a rental property or I want to invest in real estate, it becomes a sale. For me, I've got things that I'm trying to build out, figuring out, okay, so what equity do you have in your house? Where are you at with yourself, with your IRAs? Like, it's almost like financial consulting, because I want to make sure somebody doesn't buy a house and they get in trouble. Yeah, I've seen too much of that. Right, are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready to have an investor mindset? We get a lot of people that become accidental landlords. You know, they inherit a house and then they decide to put a tenant in it and then things don't go well because they don't have the mindset.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
They weren't prepared for it. They weren't prepared for it.
Okay. So what if the person's listening in right now, they're like, okay, I don't have 20% to put down, but I want to create some cash flow. I want to get involved in this, like creating wealth. What would be your best tips for these women that are listening?
The best tip. So it's a question I always get asked. Well, where do I start?
Yeah.
My CFO constantly tells me, she's like, can you please take it down to a third grade level for people that are not as crazy as you are? The best place to start is thinking about some of you younger people out there, you buy your first home, but you buy it as your first investment property. So, hey, I'm going to buy a smaller home. I don't have to put as much down. Mm-hmm. You know, when you buy owner occupied, you're putting 3% down. That's your easiest, cheapest way into real estate.
Could you buy something like a duplex?
You could. You could buy a duplex.
And then would you still only have to put 3% down?
Yes.
Oh, there you go. So, I think that's the same advice Ben Anderson gave on a previous podcast.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the market you're in.
Yeah.
Right? So here, you may not be buying your first home here, right? With 3% down. But in Phoenix, let's say, and this is what I do with my first time home buyers. I have a meeting with them and I say, look, we're going to buy a house and it's going to be a house. You can make inside home for a couple of years, but after year one, we're going to have the conversation about where you're going next, because you will keep this one and you can owner occupy jump. So you've got that loan in place. Now you only need 3% to put down on the next one.
Oh.
So now you're taking this, you're prepared to be an investor and you're leaving the emotion out of it. And now you move to the next thing.
Yeah, so anybody gets so emotional about their homes.
Yeah, the house is just a house. You can make home anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? That's the easiest way to get into it. So those of you that are like, the market's going to crash, don't try to time the market. It's not going to happen. The question is, can you afford the payment? And can you live there for a couple of years and then rent it out?
Mm.
And now you're moving on to the next one.
I love that advice, you guys. It's so amazing. So just to recap what you said, you want to make sure that you can actually afford to live into the house.
Mm-hmm.
And like, do you like suggest what Dave Ramsey says, how you need to have 6 months? I say the same thing. I'm like, you need to have 6 months of living expenses put away. That's how you know you can afford it. Like, how do you know? Right? Because what if like what if they're in commission and like their stuff fluctuates?
Yeah. You definitely should have some reserves. I mean, guaranteed. I don't know about 6 months. I think everybody's different. You know, I think that if they're stable, some of them are two incomes. I think it's just being stable. So I always kind of refer back to my house when somebody asks, well, what happens if the market crashes? Well, I know I can go get a job at Starbucks and afford my mortgage, so I'm good.
Okay.
Right? So it's kind of that, if crap hits the fan, can I still afford to live here?
Yeah. You might not like be doing what you love to pay the bills, but you're
exactly
paying the bills. Good point. Okay. And then look at it like from an investor's lens. Like, you're going to be here for a short period and then you're moving on to the next thing.
Right. So especially in the younger generation, even though they can afford it, right? And mm-hmm. this is some of the stuff I try to talk to people. Great. You can afford a $400,000 house. do you really need to go into a $400,000 house right now? Why don't you guys buy the first house as a rental property, live there, get used to those things? You don't have to buy your forever home right now. Mm-hmm. But if you can do this jump.
Sometimes it feels like you need that forever home.
Right?
I remember being 21 and being like, I need my dream home now.
Right. So you got to look at it from that standpoint of, you know, can I afford it? Should I do something smaller now and not take my budget to the max? Mm-hmm. Again, kind of being
take the emotions out of it.
Right.
Yep.
And so it's always funny when parents are like, their kids are infants and they're buying this house. We're like, well, it's good schools. It's, I mean, your kids aren't going to go to, you're not going to be here.
You're not going to be there.
Don't worry about it. So I try to get people and I look at them like, will this be a good rental property in a good area down the road? Because I'm coming back and we're going to have this conversation because I want you to have, you know, think about it. If you're in your 30s and the next 6 years, you're able to acquire five or six homes by going from one point to the next, even doing some of the fix-up stuff. You know, some people like to do the DIY projects and those types of things. I'm not very good at it. In fact, my wife told me the other day, she's like, you're not allowed to touch the tools. Like, I'm not a man's man when it comes down to tools. There's a way to build equity and do those things. And so will your 50-year-old self thank your 30-year-old self for making those decisions?
Oh, that is a good question. Will your 50-year-old self thank your 30-year-old self for making those decisions?
Right.
Write that down, you guys.
Yeah, it's important. Because mm-hmm. you don't want to look back.
Right, because everybody always like thinks just short term.
Well, it's also, are you, you know, it's like my dad. If I look back, would my dad have regrets about the things that he didn't do, you know, when he was on his deathbed?
Mm-hmm.
Was there things that he wished his 30-year-old self would have done to set him up for more success? Yeah. Not better success, but more success in his legacy.
Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate that sometimes those are the things that have to happen to mold us into asking ourselves better questions.
Yeah.
Right. And so for all of you guys listening in right now, I think it's like, don't wait for a moment like that to have to ask yourself a better question.
Right.
You know, how can I build wealth for myself now?
Yep.
Okay. So good. What's the most shameless thing you've done to build the Valentine group?
The most shameless thing I did was walking into my dad's office in 2007 and being the man of my family, because I'd always been a partner with them. That's, you know, I was always around my parents, and looking him in the eye and telling him that Wendy and I are out and severing, you know, the family business and having to go do it for myself because my dad and I were not seeing eye to eye as partners, and some of the stuff was going to go really bad. And I just had to make that decision. And it was the hardest decision I ever made in my life. But it was something that I had to sever myself from my parents for two reasons. One, eventually, hopefully it would heal the relationship. But I had to go take care of my wife and my kids. And that was what was most important.
Mm. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm proud of you for doing that.
Thank you.
And I think a lot of times people like live by illogical rules. Like some people would say like, oh my gosh, I can't ever do that to my dad. I have to like stick by my dad's side, you know, for better or for worse, even if it means like me losing my wife over it.
Right.
You know, and you had the guts to say, no, like I'm not going to live by that illogical rule. I'm going to make up my own rules for my family
right now
for the new Valentine group.
For the new Valentine group, right?
Yeah. That's pretty cool. That's awesome. Okay, where can everybody find you, Steve?
So I'm on Instagram, Steve D. Valentine, and website is stevedvalentine.com.
All right. Do you not have a podcast anymore?
It's being relaunched. It's being rebranded and relaunched.
Okay. Okay, cool. Well, I am so glad that everybody listened in today. I think I learned a lot from you, had a fun conversation. So I want to make sure everybody follows you, Steve, and I want you guys to stay tuned for the recap.
Thank you. It was fun.
Oh my gosh, that was such an amazing podcast with Steve Valentine, you guys. I learned so much, not only about like, you know, when to invest in real estate and why, But the team culture, I'm going to start buying everybody coffees at my house on Fridays, okay? And all the kids. I don't know. Maybe it's too soon for the coffee, but we'll see. we'll do vanilla steamers instead. But the main thing I'm taking away is I really, really, really want to push all of you guys to get started in investing before you think you're ready. And the way that you know you're ready is by having a great conversation with somebody you trust, somebody that has had the experience necessary to guide you in the right way. And that's why I'm a huge fan of being a coach and having a coach, because it keeps you from making the same mistakes over and over again. And it helps you save a lot of your money and build your wealth quicker. So re-listen to Steve's episode and make sure to follow him, because I know I follow him. He puts out a ton of great information all the time. He's always like cracking jokes on his employees and making life good. So he's a fun person to follow. I can't wait for you guys to have Steve in your life. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Mommy Millionaire podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to mommymillionaire.co. Make sure to follow Mommy Millionaire on Spotify and subscribe on iTunes. And it would mean the world to me if you left a 5-star review of the show. And as always, ladies, go out there and get what you want.